Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
Hi, listeners.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
We're just like talking like scary white ladies. We're like,
good morning, starshine.
The earth says hello.
I'm like, okay, Willy Wonka looking ass.
Yeah. You guys might just have to get used to us being a little delusional on these episodes.
You haven't figured that out already. This is 37.
Yeah, exactly. On top of whatever my perimenopause ass is going on with my sleep.
Girl.
She's up
in the wee hours of the morning.
Yep, and we've had quite a morning already.
We've had quite a week.
My God.
I think. Lots of movement over here in all of the things.
And listeners, we're going to be sharing about the topic of repair today. And we just had quite a whirlwind week here at the Gaia Center, which obviously we won't get into all the details of, but I do think our meeting this morning, our kind of pop-up team meeting in person, that's a lot of what we were doing is like coming together and living this message, living our values. So I just kind of wanted to like start there.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything in particular that's just like fresh for you or what you're feeling after that experience.
Yeah, I think really like the most immediate takeaways is I'm so grateful to be in a place where I can be like the true version of me that leads with my sensitivity and my emotions around, you know, hard things and hard things and things that are just like so not cut and dry. There's just so many instances where we just can't nail in a specific thing, or there's not like this person is bad or to blame it. It's just so not about that. And I think as someone who is really trying to work on my relationship to conflict and repair and reconciliation in my relationships, shout out my mom and dad. I love them both so much. And, you know, my challenges with conflict and really like my relationship to repair across my life has been zero. Hasn't been modeled to me very well. Yeah. Just hasn't been modeled, period. And so it's really healing to be in a space with everyone, with my coworkers who I like adore and admire and respect and trust, that we were able to come together and begin repair. You know, like this was one really pivotal conversation. And I feel like there's many more to come from here. Like we can only go up from here is what we were talking about yesterday. And yeah, I think my most immediate takeaway is that I'm so grateful that my inner child got to witness a little bit of what it means to start the repair attempt with people that you really love and care about and respect. And we'll get into it with this episode. Sometimes that's not possible, but when it is, it means even more.
Yeah.
And I just feel
like
really
comes even stronger.
It's even stronger. Yeah. And I just feel really grateful that like we did that together. We started that together today. Mm-hmm. So yeah. How are you feeling?
Yeah. I mean, similar. And it's like, you know, I always roll my eyes when like all of the cliches end up being fucking true. Right.
Yeah.
They're just like, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And like, you know, not the everything happens for a reason, but like, that there are riches and treasure in the manure of it all. The tower moment in the tarot, like sometimes it has to be burned down to be rebuilt. And I do think that as painful as this week has been for many of us, and as stressed as I've been, it's like I feel even better, even more committed, even more connected and eager for what is to come than I did before the chaos. Okay. So it's wild how that happens, isn't it?
It's wild. And I think it's one of those things where when it's there, I'm just like such a deeply anxious person by nature. And I always have been. And I really radically accept that about myself now and try to work with myself. And so, you know, uncertainty is anxiety's like worst nightmare, right? When we're just unsure of how something's going to turn out, a conversation or what's going to happen in the aftermath. And in ways there's still uncertainty, you know, like you said, we didn't just button it all up and we know exactly what to do, but we started. Mm-hmm. And I really just have to give everybody props for the way that we all showed up this morning. I'm really proud to call all of you like my team members and to be a part of this team. And yeah, I just think it's really cool that we're actually trying to live by what we think is important, and we're trying to remove performative layers to things. And part of that is like doing the really messy shit, mm-hmm. and not knowing exactly how it's going to turn out. Doing it a little bit scared mm-hmm. is a big important theme, I think, for me personally. So it's totally more to come. And like we're showing up, I think, really earnestly with like this topic. Not that we don't with every topic, but this one is so fresh. Yeah. And so, you know, take all of this with like knowing exactly where we are right now. And I think what better opportunity to do this when you've just experienced it so that you can be actually fucking real about
it. Yes. Amen.
Now it's time for our first segment, Tea and Crumpets, where we tell you what we can't stop talking about this week.
So I threw down two because, bitch, I make the rules, whatever. I have a fragrance, and I know recommending a fragrance is tough because everyone has a different flavor profile. But shout out to bestie Valerie. Other bestie Valerie for putting me on to Vanilla Skin by Fleur
with a PH,
babe. What a PH, Fleur. It's a body mist. They do like eau de parfums and more, but I just like a little mist. But wow, I usually don't opt for like a vanilla or a gourmand.
Fuck is gourmand?
Like a sweet.
Oh, okay, got it.
A sweet. The fuck is a gourmand? You're like, bitch, are you Francais all of a sudden? De fuck? De fuck. Me when I'm French. De fuck.
With a Q-U-E.
Shut up! Oh my God. I can't even breathe. So, yes, gourmand, like, obviously has the vanilla, but one of my favorite fragrance notes is musk and pink pepper.
Ooh.
I'm like, a pepper is pink? A pepper is pink. Yes, I say that little riddle 17 times fast. I feel like I wear it now in winter. I think I will be able to wear this in the summer. But I was at the gas station this morning and I saw one of my favorite divas and she was like, you smell great all the time, by the way. And I was like, me? She was like, yes, girl, you. So like, hey, that's kind of the best.
Okay, Fleur.
When it's, okay, Fleur. So that's my one. And then just like a silly fun other one, bejeweling random shit.
Ooh, and it, I saw the bejeweled phone and I was like,
I added more. I added more.
Literally, the gasp was completely authentic because you guys who can't see this on the YouTube, show the camera.
Look.
If you can't see this on the you're listening, go look at this phone. It's gorgeous.
And someone could look at this and be like, this looks like shit. I don't care. It looks so, it looks like a toddler did it. I don't care. My inner toddler did do it and she's really happy with it. And I'm like, you know what? Fun.
Where'd you get these little bejewels?
The Zorn.
Okay. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Don't snipe me. Right. But I've had them. I had them
better than
for
Hobby Lobby.
I mean, sure. Fuck Hobby Lobby. I'm like, whatever. Also, Hobby Lobby is open on Sundays. Did you know that?
No.
Not to the public. They make their people go up in there. So I'm like, not you fraudulently leading people about with these Christian values. Bitch, you got these motherfuckers in your stocking shelves.
Right.
By the way, on the Lord's Day. Uh-huh. So whatever. Go bejewel some random shit. It's fun. Go live your inner kid.
I love that. Oh my God.
Go ahead. What you can't stop raving about?
Well, so, you know, Borzen, the like spreadable cheese, and it's like garlicky, herby, whatever.
Maybe, yes.
So they have a dairy-free version, and I've had it maybe one other time, but it's not something we like get regularly.
Sure.
But I was doing like a little, you know, crackers, olives, cheese, kind of mini charcuterie situation. And that shit is like crack.
Oh, yeah.
The dairy-free one is one of those where it's like you could feed it to anyone and they would not know it was dairy-free.
Sure.
And it is just... I emptied the rest of the tub yesterday and now I'm grieving because I need another one.
You need more. Yeah. We're about to have a snowstorm, everyone, if you're not in Tennessee, so go load up.
Now it's time for Step Into My Office, where you get advice from your favorite professionally qualified, personally peculiar therapist.
So this listener says, Dear Em and Val, I keep hearing that conflict is normal and repair matters more than perfection, but no one ever explains what repair is actually supposed to look like. When I try to bring things up, it turns into defensiveness, shutdown, or someone saying, I already apologized, what more do you want? And then it feels easier to just let things slide and avoid conflict altogether. But I'm starting to notice how many relationships in my life feel secretly strained or distant because nothing ever actually gets dealt with or worked through. How do you repair without making things worse? And how do you know when repair isn't possible? Sincerely, tired of sweeping things under the rug.
Oh my God. Such a great submission. Yeah. And like those last two questions, I guess my immediate reaction to, you know, how do you repair without making things worse? Oof. Big question. Yeah. And a tough question. And again, if you were listening to the first part, I'm new to repair myself. So trying to figure out what that's like, especially how to model that with clients and friends. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how do you repair without making things worse? We'll get more into the weeds with this, yeah. but I think it totally depends on what happened, mm-hmm. you know, and the kind of relationship that it happened. So repair is not a one size fits all. Yay, I just apply this to any situation or any relationship. There is so many nuances to the different relationships and how we can approach that with who you are wanting or needing to repair with. So kind of keep listening, maybe more to come. I don't want to feel too repetitive yeah. there, but and more on about when repair isn't possible. But I think one of the really most immediate things is, and maybe this is a big duh, but you know, I already apologized. Yeah. What more do you want? People conflate that with thinking that's what repair means. Saying, yeah, I'm sorry.
It's one and done and we're good.
And we're done. Yeah. And repair is a genuine process to mm-hmm. sit through with people. And I believe for many instances is a multi-step yeah. process. So no wonder there's some confusion for you here, listener, because, well, I said sorry. What yeah. more do you want from me? That's not the most healthy and appropriate way to show up with this.
Right.
But that's how most people think that it is like.
Right. And so I think that it's sort of like the dialectic of if somebody in your life has tried to apologize, they've at least taken that step.
Yeah.
And then like that may be their whole toolbox for that. And I'm yes. not saying that's like great and it's going to feel good receiving that sort of like maybe what feels like a kind of a half-ass apology, but it may be the only thing they know how to do. And yes. so I think we do have to meet each other in this space of understanding how limited as a culture our tools often are in this area. And that doesn't mean that we, again, just have to be fine with that. But it's just like, okay, maybe I can help this person understand what I feel like I still need to be able to move forward, right? And they may or may not be able to offer that. And then, of course, if you're the one making the apology, there's obviously understanding the nonverbal of it all and yes. the energy behind it, because we've all had that experience of like, sorry, okay, you're right. Well, hello, of
Girl,
course that's not
going
to feel genuine.
No.
And also part of what I love about, we'll get into this later, like the example of Gottman methods, mm-hmm. aftermath of a fight, the apology part is literally step four.
Yes.
And part of why that framework is effective is because we're not just jumping into, okay, sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Like, we're deeply understanding
yeah.
what's going on with each other before we determine, okay, I get now what I need to apologize for and why. What I want to own that feels authentic. And yes. that is much better received.
Deeply. So. More to come.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for the DSM. In our DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. In this segment, we break down complicated concepts and common misconceptions about mental health, well-being, and tell you what we really think.
We are talking about what the fuck repair actually means today, and how do we try to do it when there are these ruptures of varying degrees and types. The first thing to remember, and this is true whether it's like couples fighting or whatever,
yep.
conflict is not something that like we can ever possibly avoid, right? Kind of yep. like vulnerability. Like, guess what, honey? You're alive. You're going to experience it. Anxiety, uncertainty, all of these kind of
givens.
Like little tendrils of the existential givens. So conflict doesn't mean that it's failure. And that and sometimes while we're used to having conflict, say in our romantic relationships, and we realize yeah. like, okay, we've got to learn how to do this better, we don't always translate that to other areas of life.
No.
So we don't know how to deal with conflict well at work or deal with conflict well in our friendships and have these conversations. And, you know, as you and I have talked about, one of your other supervisors, mm-hmm. my best friend, and in moments where we've had to step into that, it is so deeply valuable to be yes. able to go there with a friend. And when I haven't experienced that a lot, because you just, our society doesn't teach us how to do that in friendships.
Yes.
So ruptures do happen in all relationships. and that secure relationships, it doesn't mean that they are free of those ruptures, right? In fact, they are actually more capable of repair and more resilient, because when you hit a pothole, you know how to move through it together. You're both willing to move through it together. Avoiding that conflict does not actually protect the connection. It can erode it over time.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, going into what is the repair? Like, what does that actually mean if we're hanging around in here and thinking, oh, this relationship is really good and healthy? And so, you know, the fear. I've been in there in so many instances. So, you know, looking at what repair actually is, it's the acknowledgement of impact. Mm-hmm. Not just intent versus impact. We culturally really, really love that conversation. The opportunity to reestablish safety, because it is, your nervous system is like, I don't trust this person. Can I trust myself? What's happening? Our relationship isn't what it used to be now because we have this conflict. I hear that language all the time. I speak that language to myself all the time. Looking at that reconciliation, looking at that emotional connection, and just creating new information. I think if you are someone that has really struggled with conflict, or looking at how that comes up in with rupture and repair, it's going to be really scary to you. It's going to be really scary in an array of those attachments like we were talking about. So this gives you the opportunity to go off of new information. Oh, I'm not perfect. Neither is this person. Neither was this situation. And the opportunity to do something with it when we can breeds that greater connection and makes it stronger, makes it mean something more. What is not repair? Again, because I think we have very culturally interesting understanding of repair. Repair is not that rushed apology to make things stop. I have done this for the longest time. For the longest time, I thought that's what it was. Okay, well, I'm sorry. I was scared to lose that person. I was scared for things to change. So I'm just going to panic and say I'm sorry without actually knowing what I'm apologizing for, not doing those steps to understand why I hurt this person or where we kind of got off course with one another. I'm sorry you felt that way, but like, I just, you know, I didn't mean it. That's not repair. That's you kind of being shisty. Yeah. Like, come on.
Even if you're not trying to be.
Even though you're not trying to be, yeah. But you're leading with that defensiveness, right? Which really doesn't get us anywhere a lot of the time. Moving on without addressing anything that happened. Shout out to my people out there that have relationships where you just kind of skip over shit. And then you're like, hey, this really nutso thing happened between us. And now we're acting like it didn't. Again, that nervous system information is struggling there, and thinking that it's a one conversation and being done forever. Now, that's not to say, especially I've talked about this in the couples realm, sometimes we gotta learn when to stop and like fully let shit go.
Sure.
And you can't fully let shit go without the appropriate repair model and the process and giving it that time. Repair cannot be forced. If you want to repair with someone and they are not ready, you cannot force it. Mm-hmm. We have to wait. And so we can't just have that one conversation and think, yay, everything's fixed and brilliant. We have to keep expanding on that through continuing that emotional connectivity and also doing the personal work of what maybe led us into having this rupture. What am I responsible for and keeping an eye on, and not thinking that everything just gets solved, mm-hmm. boom, by one conversation for forever.
Yeah.
Having the wiggle room there.
I love what you said too about like, there's nuance as always and yes. all of this. And that one of the hard things is that maybe there are times, because I've seen this in a lot of my couples, I've experienced it myself on both sides probably, where like maybe a genuine repair attempt was really made mm-hmm. and like someone is just having great difficulty like receiving it, accepting it, letting it in. And I think people, whether it's personality stuff, painful past experiences, people have varying degrees on like how sort of easily they can accept a apology and forgive. And forgiveness, of course, means a million different things.
Yes.
But to be able to let that go, if a genuine repair attempt was made. And, you know, I hear sometimes how painful that it is for people who have that really hard time where they like feel like I really hold quote unquote grudges.
Yes.
Like that's just not a pleasant place to live. So I do think not only do we have to learn how to make the repair better, but it's worth looking at how can we be open to receiving repairs, even if they're done in earnest, but also maybe not perfectly.
Yes, truly.
And so repair does get blocked when one of the big things is when shame takes over.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm just a piece of shit. Well, I guess I'm just a fuck up. I hear this a lot with like, you know, in relationships with people like clients who were dealing with maybe their parents and this adult child parent interaction and where it's like they're trying to maybe confront about like, hey, this hurt me or whatever. And if a parent does not have that like solid kind of ego strength sense of self, often they will go into that sort of victim place of like, well, I guess I'm a terrible mother.
I'm just the worst. I just ruined your life, didn't I? Right? And that does fucking nothing.
No, just but pissing everyone off, mind you.
And, you know, it's if somebody does not know how to move through that experience of being able to own something and take accountability without just shifting into that sort of victim, like, well, woe is me and the whole world is against me. That's a skill set they need to learn. Also, people might prioritize being right over relational. The old cliche, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy, right? That is something that especially people who are like, see themselves as, they enjoy the debate, right? I'm just like, honey, that's great. And that's maybe a skill set you can bring into other places, but in your marriage, I'm hearing that is very not enjoyable for your partner. Sure. And it just feels like digging your heels in and trying to like prove that you're right. So that is a what Terry Real in relational life therapy would call a losing strategy, the need to be right. And then another thing that blocks it is there's this fear of abandonment or rejection, of course. So it's like, well, I don't even want to try. I'm just not going to deal with it. And then situations where, and of course, workplace is one place this comes in, but many other situations too, where power dynamics can make being truly honest and open about, hey, this hurt me or this didn't feel okay, whatever, makes it feel unsafe to go there. And an important thing to note is that some people learned growing up that conflict, the only way they saw that look was scary.
Yes.
Or so it was maybe it felt dangerous and unsafe, whether that was physically so or just emotionally unsafe. It felt like withdrawal maybe for other people or punishment was how they usually experienced it. So then their nervous system experiences approaching conflict in that way. And that idea of repair, conflict, apology, whatever, feels very threatening.
Appropriate call out. I'm sitting here like, okay, so different contexts, different repairs, like we were teasing a bit earlier. So when we're looking at rupture and repair in a romantic relationship, boyfriend, girlfriends, marriage, etc., repair often needs slower pacing.
I hate slow.
I know. And especially in that romantic sense with that attachment, I need to fix this right now.
We cannot go to bed.
We cannot go to bed angry. I fucking hate that. I tell clients all the time, actually go to bed angry and have one shitty night of sleep because sometimes it just ain't that fucking serious. And because we can't
do it. You're not ready to repair it yet.
You're not ready to repair yet. So that slower pacing matters. If you are a client of mine, we talk about emotional flooding, baby. We talk about diffuse physiological arousal, which is that stress hormone that's pumping through your body when you're in a moment of conflict. And it takes, a little science fact, 30 minutes minimum for that diffuse physiological arousal to pump fully through your bloodstream, which is the only way that you can metabolize it, which means when you hit your emotional peak, you need time. And some people, as we've talked about the window of tolerance, listen to our last episode, where you're hanging around that fight or flight, sometimes it's not 30 minutes. We need to push this conversation to an hour to a day, even. We need that slower pacing, especially if there's deep emotional hurts here. Physical cues also really matter in partnership. So we're looking at that tone of voice. We're looking at the posture and the timing of things. Maybe we shouldn't be attempting repair when someone's still pissed off and doing the dishes. Hey, maybe we need to utilize a gentle startup, as the Gottmans would say, which is really, you know, it's not over correction or over perfection of when is the right time. Not fixating too much on that, but both people or all of the party members have to be in an open space.
You know when you're coming in hot.
You know when you're coming in hot. The other aspects of that, of course, is emotional attunement over perfect words. You don't have to come in with this script, but be looking at the opportunity for attunement. You know, are we sitting and we're thinking about that tone of voice? Am I actually able to hear what you're saying? And if I am flooded, I cannot hear you. We have to table the conversation until I think I can come back. And vice versa. So family systems, you know, as we were kind of talking about with like adult child relationships, a lot of work around there, but repair may be limited by that just straight up denial, hierarchical positions in the family, generational patterns. Shout out to my trailblazers out there that are trying to not do the same shit. We see you. We are you in so many ways.
Cycle breakers.
Honey. So sometimes repair is looking at changing the expectations, not fixing the person. I think a lot of times how I apply with family of origin dynamics is, what can I control? Can I know that this person, no matter if they are my mother or my grandparent or my sister or my cousin, whoever it is, that I cannot change this person, but how am I altering my expectations? How am I putting appropriate boundaries there? It is possible. And sometimes those boundaries are, I can't be in relationship with you. Mm-hmm. And that's really hurtful and challenging. And that's a whole other episode for us to go into, I think. But looking at those expectations. Mm-hmm. Friendships. Ruptures can often come from avoidance and some built-in resentments. Mm-hmm. You know, you keep flaking on me, or you keep choosing your time with your partner mm-hmm. over our friendship, or you just haven't been here. You haven't been a physical presence. So, or I just haven't seen you. So those miscommunications, those avoidance and resentments, and really, I don't live with many regrets because I don't think it's healthy and it just doesn't serve us well. And to think of, you know, repair being actually a facet that can deepen a friendship when handled, you know, appropriately and healthily. There are some moments where I think, yeah, I've had like some pretty hard ruptures. I'm also just still a baby in the grand scheme of things. I have so many conflicts to come, I'm sure, in my life. Hey, can't wait. But, you know, the possibility of going there with certain friendships, and the friendships where I've had this, we weren't able to do that at the time. Just too young and emotional, and that's okay. But knowing I have had, you know, a challenging rupture and repair with Valerie. Her and I had a fight once, and it was awful, and we both hated it. And
other Valerie.
Yeah. But we are like the strongest we've ever been because of that and because of how much effort we put into our relationship. So it can deepen that. And then, of course, the workplace. Again, we're looking at those power dynamics. If it's you and your employer or someone on the team, you know, that obviously adds layers and that's really challenging. And repair might look like boundaries, clarity, documentation, write stuff down. Mm-hmm. And knowing, you know, I think a really good model of this was what we brought into our conversation yesterday, where it is no secret that there's Valerie and I take on like a bunch of different states with one another. But the conversation we had to have yesterday was her grounded in being the leader and me being someone that's under her leadership. And so we both just tried to really earnestly show up in that. And we both hurt each other in that way. And it was great. And we're here. And we're still working through these things together and as a team. Mm-hmm. So those dynamics really do matter. And it can make people, I think, especially when stuff pops off in the workplace, it's really scary. Your, you know, financial and like emotional well-being is tied into your job. It's no secret the world is a shit show right now. So when those dynamics are there, it can be really challenging. If you're working in a hostile work environment, that's really challenging.
And we might have to do a whole episode on like healthy versus kind of toxic workplaces.
I would love to do that.
Right? Because again, like, we're not perfect here. Nope. And we just, you know, experienced this rupture repair process and that we're in. And so it's not like in a healthy environment, again, just like a healthy relationship. It's not like ruptures won't ever happen.
No.
But man, the difference between how a healthy and system handles that versus unhealthy, you probably have too. But like, I've worked with clients where they either are currently or have been in such unhealthy, quote unquote, toxic workplace environments, whether that's just because of like their boss or larger, you know, systemic cultural issues, that I'm like, this is as harmful for this individual as like it would be if their family system were unhealthy.
Yes.
Right? Because of how big our jobs are in our lives.
Oh, it's taxing.
Yeah. And the difficulty of that. Like, obviously, we're not here to be like, hey, so like, go quit your job tomorrow.
Right.
Because we know it's not that simple. But man, whether it's like moving toward that, finding other options, finding the willingness or ability to muster the courage and bring that, even if you're kind of lower in the power structure, like, it's just so complicated. So I think maybe a whole episode on that at some point.
Heard.
Getting into like the anatomy of a genuine repair. A strong repair includes usually multiple elements. So I'm going to just kind of run through a few of them. They don't always show up in this order. So naming the rupture. Hey, something feels weird. Something, I feel like I need to clear something with you, whatever, right? There's no perfect language, but naming it, bringing it to the table. And is that often the hardest part? Like, again, I can think of moments with me and Liz where it's just like the courage to bring the thing, even if the thing is relatively small, not bringing it creates a big built up ickiness. And so that's the important thing, is like, it doesn't matter how small the thing is, bring it. And again, some things when we bring it, and we have a few minutes of dialogue, It's like, oh, we're letting that go now, right? Yeah. Not everything is a mountain. But not bringing it then can create that build and that resentment. Then owning the impact, right? Like we talked about, like regardless of your intent, I can see how that landed for you and how that would be painful. Like even if that wasn't my intention, I get that. Showing up with curiosity instead of defensiveness. This is hard, right? Especially feel like part of what's happened is a misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Then you just want to like do all the things. And I do think there's a place and a way that we can appropriately provide context and share, like, here's what was going on my side, that, you know, without it coming out as defensiveness, but just be aware that it's really important. You have to be in a really grounded place and you have to have kind of untangled that a little bit for you to provide that context in a way that's non-defensive. Help me understand, like, what was that like for you? Like, what was coming up for you? That curiosity. Validation without feeling like you have to erase your perspective. Remember, validation is not the same thing as agreeing. That makes sense. I hear you why that felt that way. And where I was coming from was this. And we're going to talk about, you know, specific framework example of that. And then like some sort of forward facing like adjustment, or like based on what we've learned from this, how might we not fall in this same pothole again? Here's what I might be able to learn from this and do differently next time. So I mentioned earlier the aftermath of a fight. And this is one that is super helpful. You can even find the outline, the description of it online.
You can
online,
link it in the show
YouTube
notes,
videos.
Right?
Yeah. So there you can find it and try it in your own partnership or any other relationship. If you know, it's really designed for once you have enough distance from the conflict that you're not just going to get in the conflict again as soon as you start talking about it. So you need to have that kind of regulated state, a little bit of distance from it to where you can talk about it without jumping into it. And I would say that this is not, it's, you know, a little more advanced, right? So you may not, if you're in a situation, say in a romantic relationship where you're high conflict and like you're going at each other and you just don't feel like you both of you have a lot of tools in the toolbox for this, jumping straight into this, you're going to be probably better suited like getting the guidance of a couples therapist to get to the point where you can use this skill on your own. And Chris and I still use this like at times, like if there's something we need to process, we will pull out our little handout and be like, all right, I think we need to, you know, talk about that thing from the other day. And it's super helpful to just have guardrails, because it's like you can say what's true for you in terms of the content, but there's structure and guardrails in terms of the structure of it. So the brief gist of it is like both of you say your feelings. I felt this and this and this. And then I felt the other person, I felt this and this. And then you each share your perspectives of the situation. And the important thing here is like, I might say my perspective, Emerson, this is what I experienced. And then you said this and I felt this. And then, you know, walked out of the room. And your perception of the exact same interaction might be quite different than mine. And people have a really hard time understanding that, because then they get into like the objectivity battle of like, no, that's not how it went, it was like this, and like again losing strategy.
No, you're both gonna have your own realities of something.
And that's kind of a mind fuck, but it's true. So that's the hardest step probably of all of it. Step three is triggers and kind of naming a little context of like, you know, let's say that I felt shame in this conflict, that I might say, you know, and shame is just really one of my sensitive points, because I've had this like big inner critic since I was a kid and that happened. And so bringing in that, you know, not to like quote unquote excuse bad behavior, but to put it in a wider context of like, this is part of why this is such a sensitive spot, or what the Gottmans would call an enduring vulnerability of mine, and being able to hear that from each other and understand. Then we get to, you know, here's the things that maybe set me up to not be at my best in that moment. I had been stressed. I'd been irritable. I had been, you know, kind of feel like I maybe was pushing you away. And then here's the part I want to apologize for. I'm sorry that I raised my voice. I'm sorry that I, you know, said this thing that was mean, and that's not how I feel. And then the step five, because after you both do all of these, is the, okay, so based on this, here's what I might do differently. And would, you know, would you be open to trying this differently? And then vice versa. So it's beautiful structure.
It's great.
But again, a little bit advanced. Another thing just to consider is the other person's not always going to be ready for it, mm-hmm. right? So maybe you show up and you're like, I'm bringing all my best tools. I'm grounded. I'm ready to be accountable. I'm being open and vulnerable. And the other person shuts it down or minimizes, deflects. They won't engage. That does not mean that it was wrong of you to attempt that repair, right? There are reasons why the repair can get rejected.
Why repair gets rejected? And again, the important marker here, it's not an excuse to harm, but we're adding the context. The other person is up there. They're flooded. Mm-hmm. They're in that fight or flight. They're dysregulated. We literally cannot hear one another. Shame is blocking accountability. We all have that little shame monster. Some are bigger monsters than others, but accountability is the antidote to defensiveness, right? So being able to show up with an idea of I, and not in a selfish way, but I language, I, you know, felt this, and being able to appropriately use I instead of point and say you and just deflect and turn everything externally.
Can I ask a question real quick? That's like maybe a generational thing or like a kind of pop culture thing. Someone I feel like I heard this somewhere recently. Is accountability like the word of the day? It is. Maybe it was like on Real Housewives of Mormon.
Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
Yeah. Oh, so like, my God. I'm curious like how you see that maybe getting distorted in pop culture, pop psychology. Because obviously we know accountability is necessary, but like how is it being sort of maybe distorted in that way?
From that, I did watch season 3, shout out if anyone did, of Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, where they were all like, oh yeah, we use that word a lot, and one of them actually was like, I should Google what this means. Bitch, are you kidding me? So I do think that, you know, maybe like for that kind of example, but I think like the Gen Z, like the Zillennial kind of understanding of accountability, because we live in a world where, you know, like Gen Z is curating cancel culture. So like to me, that accountability goes directly in with how we deal with things that are cancelable. What we mean in the era of apology videos on the internet when you're a creator and you fucked up or something gets dredged up from your past and you need to go take accountability or apologize for it. I think Gen Z Zillennials have a really interesting interpretation of that, where we have a pretty clear understanding, I think, generationally of what it does mean to take accountability. And then there is that interesting piece of cancel culture where, you know, someone has to be canceled first, and then, you know, they'll make an apology or an accountability attempt. And a lot of times that gets shut down because it's not done in a specific way. And I don't take sides of it in that way. I think there have been really great examples of people that have taken accountability. Yeah. Jenna Marbles is a huge one. She was like a YouTuber, and she kind of had a lot of her like previous like comedy that was dredged up where it was like pretty microaggressive and racist. Mm. And, you know, she was on the internet for a really long time, and she was like, you know what? I really fucked up here, and I don't want to keep, and this is a very, you know, extreme example for some, but she like completely removed herself from the internet.
Yeah.
And was like, there were so many things that went into that, and there were other instances, but that was the kind of accountability that she wanted to take. Yeah. And people grieve her being gone. And it's really interesting to see how she handled it versus a Colleen Ballinger, if you're familiar with her. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the worst possible.
What not to do.
Where I'll show it to you because you just won't even fucking believe. But shout out to the people that know about Miranda and that fuck ass ukulele video where she's like, toxic. Everyone's toxic and everyone's coming for me. When she like was being fucking weird and like legit predatory and needed to like really actually take accountability for that. And she was just like, I did nothing wrong. Yeah. All of you are toxic and disgusting and on the cancel culture. So to me, I mean, that's a whole like episode. I just went off on a whole spiel, but just trying to give context to generationally how we look at it, because it is very split.
Yeah.
Gen Z is pretty divided, I would say, and what is and is not okay in terms of, especially if you have a public persona, mostly. And so we mostly talk about it on the public persona way, not in the individual normal people
But way. It is interesting to consider, how does that sort of like, no, we're not going to accept your apology or accountability because you either fucked up too bad or like, how would that, might that permeate then in our interpersonal relationships? I will briefly mention just one other example that I remember being inspired by. It was maybe just a few months ago. I think Cory Booker reposted it on his account. This guy, I don't even remember what type of like creator or whatever business owner he was, but he did like a stitch of, there was someone using, and you could not tell anything about the person who was in the shot of the original video, but someone was, had a like Pepsi bottle or something like that, that this thing was helping them open. And he saw this and was just like, basically like, oh my God, kids these days are so fucking lazy. Like, are you kidding me? Look at how hard it is for me to open my bottle. And then what, of course, he didn't realize, and I, you know,
it was like giving him the benefit.
Yes, exactly. It was an accessibility tool. So he then, you know, made this follow-up video, which is what, you know, Cory posted kind of the whole thing of, he took what I felt like was really beautiful accountability and just saying, I'm deeply ashamed by this.
Yes.
I did not know, which is not acceptable. And I, you know, support this and love this and want this to be available for people. And just like, it just was that like completely non-defensive, total ownership. And I just think, and especially coming from like a white male, it was like, thank you for modeling this.
Yes.
Anyway.
We could do a whole accountability episode. Shit. I'm like, look at us all, it's just all popping in off. Future Emerson taking up, you know? Yes, many ways why it gets rejected. You know, looking at that shame, that threat of my self-image. Am I a good person? I fucked up. What does this mean about me? Power dynamics, again, making repair, like, not possible or inconvenient. Just generally, like we said in the beginning, people don't necessarily have the skill book for these kind of emotionally intelligent things due to experiences or anything like that. So a failed repair attempt is often saying, depending on the situation, but we're looking more at the person's capacity, the current capacity for that, than the delivery, if you really are genuinely showing up for that. So what can you do when your attempt for repair isn't met? And this is typically where we look at the spiral or self-abandon, isolation, so kind of slowing it down. Naming the attempt for yourself, as we would do in the one-to-one or the two-to-one or whatever, but actually trying to name it for yourself. I showed up, I tried. That does matter, even if it wasn't received or done perfectly. Resisting, over-explaining, or chasing. I really do this. But just repeating, you know, repeating yourself louder or nicer doesn't create consent. Yeah. You just keep poking the bear out of that desperation. And in fact, that's going to piss someone off more.
Yeah.
Or it's just going to put their claws
into a corner.
Back them into the corner. And like, that's not great. Setting an internal boundary. I'm willing to repair. I'm not, you know, willing to beg for engagement. And that's a really tough one to kind of come across, where some of that uncertainty, I may have to wait. What is it like when, if this person comes around, and then maybe I'm not, maybe too much time has passed, and then I've got to deal with that and what that's like. So, but in some kind of way, you know, knowing, okay, I did make that attempt, I tried. Grieving the loss of what you hoped for, I think, is really important. You know, what hurts the most kind of turns not into the rupture, but it's the fact that the repair isn't mutual presently, or maybe mutual never. And that's really hard to kind of come along with, especially if this is a really important relationship and whatever that means for you. And so kind of going from there, where we're looking at not spiraling into that shelf, like that self-shame, but looking at what's next from a place of values, not reactivity. So this could mean just putting some distance there, whether it's the emotional distance or physical distance, if that's a possibility, what have you. Adjusting those expectations. So just being mindful of what can exist here right now. Setting firmer boundaries internally and externally. What is the stuff that I need to keep an eye on? If I'm checking their location or incessantly ruminating about it, I need to kind of interrupt that pattern and halt myself. So thinking of that internal, external boundaries. And or then eventually disengaging, knowing if there comes a time where, okay, we won't ever know how things buff out. Yeah. There have been relationships that have never been repaired, and there are relationships that have gone years, and at some point they may repair, and we never know, and we can never know. And a part of that is coming more from that, like, radically accepting place of
uncertainty
yeah. and that we're not always, it's one of our givens, that we're not always going to have control over what happens in our yeah. lives. Mm-hmm. And that it sucks sometimes, but you have to move on.
On the flip side, if, you know, again, talking about that it's important to gain skills both for the making the attempt, a repair attempt, but also mm-hmm. receiving
yes.
repair attempts. So, you know, it's, we're not saying like, we'll just no matter what, accept it, right? Because we don't want, the bottom line is you don't want to abandon yourself. But acknowledging that maybe there is a genuine repair attempt, but it's still going to feel shitty in the moment. So how do you discern, no, I'm not basically not open to this versus just this still feels shitty and
yeah.
I might can be open to it. Lots of reasons, again, why this part can be hard because you're still hurt. Your body still does. I mean, this is like, I think what several of us here were in this week is like, yeah, like mentally I'm there.
Yeah.
But also like, my body is still recovering from this. And it can be, both things can be true at the same time, that like, I'm okay now and I'm seeing everything more clearly, and the hurt, there's still some hurt in there, yeah, right?
Of course.
You may not trust the person making the attempt that they're going to follow through. Mm-hmm. Now that's tricky because especially in, I think of, you know, couples, and if you come at this from like, oh yeah, right. Like, I'm sure. It's like, and I get that often comes from history of like, maybe this apology has been made and nothing changed, but like we can't know. We can't know that, who knows, anytime something could be different. But often we have to look at, well, what is going to make this time different? How can we figure out more, get deeper into this so we know what's actually needed to make this time different? You might be afraid of minimizing your own pain, and so you don't want to, you know, receive that repair. Or there's been some sort of toxic thing like gaslighting, yeah. right? Which does happen. Like, yes, it's a buzzword and it gets overused, but if you have actually experienced that, it can be very difficult to be open to receiving a repair attempt. Again, it's not about rushing forgiveness. So if we're looking at how you can do this without abandoning or bypassing your truth, let yourself take time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I hear you, even like, I think that you really mean what you're saying. I still need time yep. to sit with this. I'm not ready to, like, you know, just fully accept this, or even, I may not feel ready to say my part of things. I just need time. Again, that differentiation of impact from intent, you can acknowledge the effort that's being made, and you can still name, I'm still hurting. You might name specifically if you think there is something you still need, like, yeah, but I need to know that in the future, you're going to let me know when you're at work late, because this has been a pattern and I've asked for this before. And I think that would really help us to not get in the same place again, right? Yeah. Whatever the thing is. Watch for the patterns, not just the apology. So we want to see that follow through. We want to see often that there is actual behavior change, even if it's not perfect. Like, say, you know, your friend is always running 30 minutes late. Doesn't mean they're never going to be late, but maybe they're only 10 minutes late. And I'm like, okay, I can see efforts being made here. And that obviously consent is important, that you get to decide how open to that repair that you are at that moment. And that accepting that does not mean that the relationship stays exactly the same. Sometimes there's a little bit of evolution in that.
Yeah, absolutely. How to know when repair may not be possible. This is the hardest part and often the most clarifying. Not all relationships, like we've been kind of saying, are repairable. And it doesn't mean that you failed, that the whole thing was this failure. So repair may not be possible when the person is consistently denying impact, which is really hard. Yeah. They're stuck in that shame or that defensiveness, and whatever that is, that internal piece is just not coming through. Accountability is conditional or performative. So it's like
Nick on Love is Blind season 9. Anybody? No.
Oh.
Gross. Such performative accountability.
Ew.
It's like you could feel it.
He was like, yeah, I'm sorry, I guess. And like,
yeah, I really see that.
I really see that, and I'll do better. And then he was a piece of shit the next day. Also, me has never watched that show. I just maybe have a thing against Nick's. I don't know. Okay. There is ongoing harm or a boundary violation. Yeah. Remember that whole part of like getting information for your nervous system? If it's like, a little bit of safety, back to being deeply unsafe. Like, that fucking sucks, and that's not great, folks. Power dynamics, again, and however that occurs, are preventing that honesty. You're doing all the emotional labor. I think this is a really big thing for people to think about, is you may be someone that has that deep emotional well and that capacity, and you really show up for that. And not every kind of relationship has that exact 50-50, because that's bullshit and just not realistic. And there needs to kind of be a bit of equitable peace here between us both. So, of course, safety, emotional or physical, is compromised also. Not a fan of just breezing over stuff, especially if physical safety was ever compromised. Like, that's a really big another part of the conversation here. So, repair versus reconciliation. This distinction does matter. Repair is addressing the harm, restoring the dignity, naming the truth. Reconciliation is resuming the relationship as it was, or being able to get closer, growing from this challenging thing that we went through together. You can repair without reconciling, and you can also choose closure without repair. Mm-hmm. It's that therapy depends. Question.
It depends.
And everyone hates that. But I'm like, baby, it's true. And that is the difficult truth, that sometimes the repair needs to be purely internal. Mm-hmm. Can you forgive yourself? Can you make peace with what you did or didn't do, or what you didn't get? Can you validate your own experience? I showed up in this way. I didn't do the best. I didn't show up in the way that I think I wanted to. What information can I take from this for next time or a different situation? And being able to choose yourself without needing their agreement if we are unable to go from there. Not every relationship is meant to be fixed. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the generational take here is Gen Z is pretty, we're not opting for many repairs. It's easy to just cut people off and ghost and have this hard layer. I wish we repaired more. I wish we talked about that actually more. And there are some relationships that do not need to be fixed due to abuse or toxicity. And I am not condoning any of that. Sometimes you do not need to be around someone that hurts you really fucking bad if it's unhealthy and scary or abusive. Some are meant to be reflected on and maybe better understood, and we can go places, but some are to just understand within yourself, grieve that, and release it. Mm-hmm. So, but for real, repair isn't about being the better communicator or the more healed person.
It's about staying present when your nervous system is like fight, flight, freeze, freak out.
Yes. And sometimes the most painful realization is that someone can't or won't repair, and that information does matter.
Right, because repair is a skill set, it's a choice, and it requires capacity. And you get to decide who gets access to you based on how they handle ruptures.
Amen.
And now, our musical segment. Now that's what I call...
Okay.
Where... Emerson and I each share a song with each other each week as representatives of our respective generations. We tell you a little bit about the song or artist, and then we press pause, we share the song with each other, and then we come back for our live reactions. And we're capturing it all on a Spotify playlist linked in the show notes for you.
So today, of course, is, you know, about apology or repair or something just like in that vicinity. We love a theme here, yeah. But for real. So, Valerie, what song did, you know, dig on for us today? I had to throw it in there.
The song is Dig by Incubus. Ooh. So Brandon Boyd, a.k.a. my teenage crush, I would say he's still got it, has said that this song is about love, but love in a platonic sense, or a love that stems from the power of camaraderie. He says, I was in a moment in my life where things were looking really dark, and the people closest to me, the guys in the band, were like a safety net. They were, without trying to, reminding me of who I was in the midst of some of my personal struggles. Sometimes really good friends can remind you that you are not your ego. Mm. And I just thought, you know, yeah, with the aspects of rupture that are like very fucking humbling, like I've been experiencing, this song just really spoke to me.
Oh, yeah.
Thoughts?
I mean, wow, like the little, like we watched the lyric video, so it's just like this like sunset. And I don't know, you always just pick a good like...
emotional bop.
Yeah. And I'm like, yes. Also, we were just giggling because Val was like, I had a crush on him and I call him Brandy. And I just was fucking geeking about that. No, but so lovely. I really love just the, you know, like the quote that you pulled where, especially with like artists, I don't know. I just was like having this thought the other day about celebrities and artists. And I'm like, how lonely they must be sometimes. Like, I just have this like empathy moment where I think, oh my God. And like the families and the like relationships that they create with people. And so like to hear someone, you know, like talking about that and the realness of that is really cool. Yeah, I really liked it.
What you got?
I picked I Was Wrong by Chris Stapleton, aka my parents, more so my dad, calls him Staple Dan because he's just a father. So this one that we're going to watch is specifically from his performance at ACL Austin City Limits. This was from 2018. The studio version is fucking amazing, though. And I mean, like, he sounds the same.
Yeah.
So this is from his second studio album, From a Room, Volume 1, released in 2017. Babe, you just would not believe that this man knows how to give a gut-wrenching, soulful track. I don't really prescribe much to country music. Yeah. And I don't think I can even put him really just solely in country. He's bluesy and soulful. Yeah. But this album and this song you'll hear is kind of all just about like the wounds. He just mediates on like the wounds that people suffer, interpersonal wounds, the road toward healing that they travel on to learn about this pain. This song in particular is more geared towards repair and or regrets from like a romantic relationship in specific. But it's just fucking good. So I'm excited for you to hear it.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by him. He's also, like, I'm not typically a country person, but again, the right person can kind of bring me in.
He's the one.
And all I know is, like, Tennessee whiskey, so.
Oh, you're not even ready.
Okay, guys, I just discovered this artist. His name is Chris Stapleton. I don't know if any of you have heard of him, but.
Get on it. His discography is very special to me. Like, reminds me so much of my parents and, like, when we first moved to the States, like, he was one that we listened to all the time, like, integrating into this, like, Southern culture. I mean, it's just so important to my family, but he is fucking disgustingly talented.
Disgustingly talented is exactly it. And it's, like, regardless, he's one of those genre crossers like Brandi Carlile where it's, like, regardless what kind of music you think you like, listen to that and tell me you don't enjoy it and are not impressed by that talent.
Yes. Right?
So, love that. And then there was this Take It Back was kind of a refrain in the song. And I was just thinking of that sort of sentiment and like how painful that is when you're in that place of,
I want to take it back.
Because we can't. We literally can't in this temporal universe that we live in.
Yes.
And yet how strong that desire can be when we realize that we fucked up. We
caused pain.
Yeah, we caused pain. We maybe even said something we don't actually believe or feel to be true or mean. And yet we cannot take it back. Ugh.
Yeah. I thought it was mwah for today.
And now for our last segment of the show, welcome to Fire Dumpster Phoenix. It is rough out there, y'all, and we need all the hope we can get. It's time to go dumpster diving for some positive news and rise from the leftover Happy Meal ashes together.
Making public transport less lonely. A Toronto man has gone viral after sharing videos of being courageously kind on the subway to help others feel more connected and less lonely. Minjay Cho, babe, I hope I said that right, has amassed 36,000 Instagram followers, and I'm sure across a bajillion other platforms, by sharing videos filmed through a pair of Meta glasses to be less intrusive than holding a phone in someone's face, I believe is his rationale. Capturing interactions with the local public and their skeptical turned positive and loving responses to him, giving affirmations, wishing people well, saying hi and introducing himself, etc. He said to CTV News Toronto, quote, "It started at a time when I was in a lonely, disconnected part of my life, when I wasn't seeing that many people. I wanted to push myself to show up more openly in everyday life with social interactions and to rebuild my social confidence." Mm-hmm. Just like watching the people kind of, you know, spark up and, you know, turn around and think, oh my God, this person, he's talking to me. I don't know. It's just one of those, like, there was a very cynical part of me, and this is why I wanted to put it down, just to be real. There was a very cynical part of me that came online when I first read this, where I was like, he's filming people without their consent and the Meta glasses and this. And then I was like, how sad are we in this world where, like, we have to think, and then we have to think about, like, celebrating, like, basic human interaction. And then I told my critic, I was like, I gave her a piece of candy and I was like, girl, just like go play Barbies. It's okay. Yeah. Like, let the big girl handle it. And I sat with it and I wanted to share it because it is important to share these like small stories where being, we are the loneliest we've ever fucking been. And it is important to see that. And if you are someone that is struggling and moving around in this city that you live in or where you are in the world, and you see that and think, man, how nice it is. I read this, and this week alone, every time I got into the elevator here at work, I tried to say, hey, good morning. Every single person said, hey, or good morning back. And we joked about how slow the elevator was or how cold it was or you stay safe out there. And like, it doesn't matter, but it was such a brief, I'm going up four flights of stairs. I don't need to be
on my phone
or turned away from you. Just turn towards the people around you. It matters.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. And, you know, I'd be curious that it might even be that he does get consent, but he's using the glasses just because, again, it'd be less weird than like, hi, can I film our interaction with my phone?
No, for once I was like, I totally see the point of that.
Totally. And that's like, hey, guys. Technology, when used ethically, et cetera, can be for good. Speaking of which.
What did you get?
So mine is technology in the dictionary sense of like tools, like any tools are technology technically. Yes. And this is a BBC article that this cow has astonished scientists with rare use of tools. So this scientists are rethinking what cattle are capable of after this Austrian cow, Veronica.
With a K, babe.
Yep. Was found using tools with impressive skill. This discovery was reported by researchers in Vienna. And this is showing us that cows might actually have cognitive abilities far beyond what we might have imagined. Veronica's just chilling in the mountain village in the Austrian countryside. And she has perfected the art of scratching herself using sticks, rakes, and brooms. Like, you can see the video of her with it, like, in her mouth, like, using it to scratch her back. And then she'll switch, like, she'll use the softer side on her, like, sensitive underbelly skin. And then the rougher side on her back. Like, what the hell?
Oh, my God.
Amazing. And this kind of tool use has rarely been seen in the animal kingdom, has never been documented in cattle before. And so one of the people at the University of Veterinary Medicine in Vienna said, we were not expecting cows to be able to use tools, and we're not expecting a cow to use a tool as a multi-purpose tool. Until now, that's only been reported consistently with chimpanzees.
So, I figured. Like,
hello, animal kingdom, show up.
Like, hey.
Yeah.
Veronica. Cool.
I know, girl.
I'm like, also, CeraVe, like, sponsor her. She's itchy. Like, get her some creams. I don't know.
Oh, my God, I love it.
Oh, my God. Well, that's what we have for you this time, folks.
Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you at the next one. Bye.
This has been another episode of But For Real, produced by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder, and edited by Sean Conklin.
But For Real is a Gaia Center production. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit GaiaCenter.co or find us on Instagram at the Gaia Center and at ButForRealPod.
But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment.
Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy here about sharing our opinions on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode.
See you next time, bestie.